animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. Before we address this week's show, I want to express my sincere hope that you fared well in the wake of Hurricane Milton and or those tornadoes' fierce onslaught, while many, of course, were still recovering from Helene's impact. And if you didn't fare well, if you were unfortunate enough to sustain some damage or loss of any kind, I extend my heartfelt condolences to you and yours. Meanwhile, today, my guest is Nancy Mura, president of the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay, or RCTV. The RCTV's policy, akin to a mission statement, states in part that, quote, the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay rescues, raises, rehabilitates, and releases hundreds of wild native birds of prey annually across the Hillsborough, Hardy, Highlands, Pasco, and Polk counties of Florida, end quote. RCTV pursues a wider agenda than this, including hosting environmental or nature education events. Indeed, this interview today with Nancy is partly pegged to the Wonders of Wildlife Festival taking place November 9th at Edward Medard Conservation Park in Plant City. That's running from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. on the 9th. The Wonders of Wildlife Festival will provide attendees with the opportunity to see some of Florida's native species up close. Among them, birds of prey, skunks, snakes, tortoises, and others, demonstrations of various kinds, wildlife programs, live animal presentations, exhibits, and more. Over the course of the day, these and other activities are designed by the festival to help those on hand learn about sustainability, conservation efforts, and assorted threats to wildlife. To learn more about the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay and this forthcoming Wonders of Wildlife Festival, when I speak with Nancy Mura in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WNF. But it's definitely festival season, so coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Ann Paul, an organizer of the annual Florida Birding and Nature Festival, a four-day event held in and around Apollo Beach, Florida, running October 17th, that's tomorrow, through October 20th. Across those 4 days, the festival will offer an array of opportunities to observe and learn about wildlife, including field trips, boat outings, expert seminars, keynote speakers, and an unticketed nature expo for the 4 days. We'll hear a bit more about the festival, which will cover everything from bird photography to orcas to butterflies to shorebirds. I speak with Ann Paul later in today's program on Talking Animals on WM. Right now, though, let's discuss the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay and its forthcoming Wonders of Wildlife Festival with the center's president, Nancy Mura. A reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Nancy Mura back to Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. And driving over with a kestrel, no less. Can you say a little bit about your friend that you brought into the studio?
He's an American kestrel. He's okay. The smallest falcon in North America. His name is Chirp.
And Chirp?
He makes his living doing exactly what he's doing right now, and that's educating people about birds of prey and their importance in the environment.
That's great. Well, I'm sure he does a great job at it. He looks very comfortable and knowledgeable, and so we'll ask him some questions somewhere along the way, of course. But before we dive in too much, I feel it's incumbent to ask how the Raptor Center fared through hurricanes, both Helene and Milton.
We were really lucky. We had a lot of tree branches down, and some things fell on top of our enclosures, but nothing was damaged. So we were really lucky.
That's great. What preparations are made, or were made in this case, at the Raptor Center when a major storm is looming? I mean, you probably had to do some preparations. It was unclear, obviously, what was going to happen in the exact path of the storm.
For us and every major rehab center throughout this area in Central Florida actually took all of their birds and animals and brought them into secure buildings.
Wow.
So for us, that was 41 birds of prey, 11 possums, armadillo, and countless baby squirrels.
Yeah, squirrels seem big. In fact, yeah, I think I saw on social media once or twice references to that. So why are squirrels so you know, prevalent there, or why are those so central to what happened in the wake of the storm?
Well, they're vulnerable at this time of year because they have babies. They have nests, and when their nests are in the trees, and when the trees get whipped around or fall down, they're affected. So they do typically build two nests, but if the whole tree comes down, it's really difficult for, a mother squirrel to recover from that. They end up hypothermic, and fortunately for Milton, different than Helene. After Helene, we still had rain for a couple days, so that made it really difficult for the mother squirrel to find the babies or to reunite them with the mom. Milton, the weather was cleared the next day, so we were lucky. The next day, we were able to unite 37 squirrels back with their moms by actually calling a baby squirrel distress signal and have the mom come down and get them. But they're good moms.
I noticed that, and I thought that was really interesting because some of us who live where squirrels might be around or baby squirrels might be found, often, until we know better, do the wrong thing by saying, oh, there's an abandoned baby squirrel, we should take it somewhere or do something with it. And, of course, that's exactly the wrong thing to do because the mom's typically nearby and going to come take care of that baby and come retrieve that baby. But on top of that, the thing you just alluded to I thought was really interesting is the sound that helps reunite mom and baby. What
you
is
can
that?
Actually just Google baby squirrel distress call.
Yeah.
And when baby squirrels are hungry, they scream for their mom. It's a little screech. And so there's a way that you can just play that sound. You find the baby squirrel on the ground. I lay my phone right next to the baby squirrel playing the sound, step back 50 feet and start looking. And that'll alert the mom where that squirrel is, so she can come down and retrieve it.
But it's a generic sound, right? I mean, it sounds like any baby squirrel that's in distress.
That is correct.
But the mom just is attuned to that because her baby squirrel is missing at the moment. So it's like, well, maybe that's me. Maybe that's my kid. And then they go looking for it.
Mm-hmm. And you might even have two squirrels that are in close proximity who has lost their babies. They hear that baby and they'll come take it and take care of it.
Oh, wow. So even if it's not their baby, you mean? Did I follow
that.
You?
Yes, they will.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's some serious maternal instinct, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yes, they are. But there were hundreds and hundreds of baby squirrels that had to come in that were injured or hypothermic or, no sign of mom. They tried to reunite, didn't work. Storms are terrible for squirrels, and they come at the same time of year the baby squirrels are born.
Right. It's just that season, mm-hmm. at that time of
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you personally fare through the storms?
We did fine.
Oh, great.
We did fine.
So, all right. So sounds
scary
like
the night, but other than that, lost power, but we have power back. We have water. We're good.
All right. So it sounded like between the facility and your own place, pretty lucky all in all.
All in all.
Yeah. So we're here, of course, primarily to discuss the Raptor Center, as we started to, and the Wonders of Wildlife Festival that's coming up November 9th. But let's hit some basics, because I'm guessing not everyone probably knows exactly what a raptor is. Can you sort of tell us what defines a raptor?
It's not a dinosaur.
Okay, that's good.
Raptors are birds of prey. So eagles, owls, kites, falcons, hawks, vultures, and osprey all fall into the category birds of prey. And so these are birds that are carnivores. And the term raptor collectively covers all of the birds of prey.
So if it is a raptor, it's a bird of prey, and basically vice versa.
That's correct.
Yeah. The prey, does it vary a fair amount from bird to bird, or is it all largely the similar kind of prey? Or?
Well, it does vary from bird to bird, but in general, you have small birds like the American kestrel. They really eat a lot of bugs. Mm-hmm. And kites, the swallowtail kites, they are here during the spring. They eat dragonflies and a lot of bugs. But in general, most raptors do eat mice and rats. Large raptors like great horned owls, red-tailed hawks, and eagles. Also, some of them, like the eagles, fish and osprey, only eat fish. But they also eat some larger prey like rabbits.
Yeah, and I should, note for people who might not have heard this, I guess it was about 5 years or so ago when you were last in studio, you did have a hawk, right? A big
red-tailed hawk.
Yeah. So, and still doing well, apparently.
Her name is Zoe, and she's still doing great.
I couldn't remember her name. That's great. So to what extent have you found over the years that raptors can be, that's maybe the right word, is polarizing, just in that, for example, someone might love the bald eagle for the symbolism and everything that goes with a bald eagle, let's say. Well, the next person might be spooked by owls, and then the next few people might feel vice versa. But do you find that people have some uncomfortable feelings about raptors? Or
I think that there's two reactions. You love them because they're just magnificent to look at. To be next to a bald eagle is wonderful. I think a lot of people don't like the thought that their prey is live animals. And so that is, kind of... And if you're squeamish, that's you don't want to see that National Geographic moment, right?
So, right, swooping down and
Their major function on the planet is rodent control. They all, even the little kestrel that I have, will eat small mice. Your eagles will eat, large rats. So rodent control is one of their primary functions on the planet. One thing that happens with us in rehab is of course, rat poison. A lot of people don't realize a poisoned rat will
I'm just going to ask you about that. That seems to come up more and more, and it seems like it's become like a bit more of an issue or just more widespread, maybe?
I think that it's really one of those things that none of us want rats. Okay, none of us want rats at all in our houses or in our yards. They are a part of our environment, and many, many animals, even the coyotes with a good rat population, will only eat rats. They, coyotes get a bad rap a lot of times. I think a lot of people just don't realize that rat poison kills everything up the food chain. And there's a lot more attention to it because there are a lot of groups. We have one called StopRatPoison.org here in the local area. There's another one, Raptors Are the Solution, RATS, great website out of California. Those folks have actually been able to outlaw rodenticide in the state of California. And our goal as wildlife rehabbers and a lot of people in pediatric emergency rooms will also tell you there's 25,000 children across this nation that get poisoned with rat poison every year. It's something that we need to outlaw across the board nationwide.
So the idea is for people that are still trying to get rid of rats for whatever their reason might be, find some other method and let's stop with the rodenticide.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I mean, the biggest thing that I would say is exclude them from your house. Make sure you don't have any holes and don't leave brush piles in your yard. A lot of times we think, we'll leave that little mulch pile over there with leaves. Rats love to nest in anything they can get underneath. A bucket turned under, upside down, is something they can crawl under.
Like so it's shelter.
Food, water, and shelter, right? So it's just making sure that you keep your yard clean and keep the trash out of your yard and the rats really won't be around.
Yeah. But the main thing is, if you have a rat issue, don't solve it that way. Solve it by any number of other methods.
What are
some of the better methods that people recommend so people do not use
rat
poison?
There's also traps where they have snap traps inside, the old-fashioned snap trap, but it's inside of a little box so you don't have to see it, and you just discard the whole trap. But there are live traps, and there's traps where you can trap multiple traps, and then they give you instructions of what to do with the rats.
And how did you first get interested in raptors?
I love bald eagles. I was actually...
So you were the person I was talking about when... Yeah, I was talking about Ann Paul.
Well, we're going to be at that festival this coming weekend as well.
I figured, there's a lot of overlap between some of these festivals,
Yeah,
right?
I was the vice president of Tampa Audubon, and I was a coordinator for their program called Eagle Watch, and I got a call from their Center for Birds of Prey in Maitland saying, one of your bald eagles is on the ground. Can you go get it? And I... thought that's kind of strange. I thought we were supposed to be looking at eagles. I didn't think we were supposed to be touching them.
Right.
But I rescued that bald eagle, and sadly, it had
just out of the blue, or had you had rescue experience like that previously?
No, just out of the blue. They kind of coached me over the phone. I got that bird, and sadly, that bird didn't make it. But I did get the next call I got was for a bald eagle at MacDill Air Force Base on the 4th of July.
Wow.
And so
that's
I thought.
As patriotic a scenario as you can get, I guess,
So went, and there were six MPs there. And I remember them saying, are you going to get that bird? My heart was beating out of my chest.
Right.
I was like, at that point, I'd had some training, and I was like, yes. We were able to rescue that bald eagle and had surgery. We were working with Busch Gardens Animal Care Center, which unfortunately, due to avian influenza, we can't do anymore. But they operated on it. We rehabilitated, and we were able to release it out of Picnic Island.
I
thought that was the coolest thing that I have ever done in my life.
So and you were hooked.
I was hooked at that point.
Yeah.
And not
how many
only
years
hooked,
ago
but hooked
was that?
To the big birds. That was... almost 14 years ago.
Wow. That's really great. Well, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Stoss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Nancy Mura, president of the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay, which rescues, rehabilitates, and releases hundreds of wild birds of prey each year, including she's got a kestrel named Chirpin here in the studio with us. we're going to ask some questions of at some point. We'll see what kind of answers we get. But the center is also presenting Wonders of Wildlife Festival coming up. It's a multifaceted extravaganza happening November 9th at Edward Medard. Am I saying Medard right?
It's Edward Medard Park.
Okay, yeah. They say Conservation Park, at least I think on some of your material, so I wasn't sure if that was the full complete name. But that's in Plant City, if I'm not mistaken. And if you have questions for Nancy about raptors, about the coming festival, about anything else related, or just would like to offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So tell me about the work that the Raptor Center does. I mean, we've already gotten a little bit of a sneak preview, I think, but what are the most common ailments or injuries that leads to birds of prey being rescued and rehabilitated there?
There's a variety of different things that happen besides poisoning. We had an osprey that came in this morning that had flown over a power stack that all of its feathers are burnt.
Oh, jeez.
Hit by car, running into buildings right now. We're at the height of migration in Florida. There are some nights over a million birds flying over us at about 1,400 feet heading south. And so we've got all of that going on at the same time. So now when they're migrating, they get exhausted. And now they've hit a hurricane.
Yeah.
And so it forces them to come down to the ground. So many birds come through, are exhausted. But we are in the height of migration right now in Florida, which means you can see all kinds of things. And it's fascinating. The day after the storm, my trees were full of warblers that had come in after that storm had gone past us.
So you hadn't seen previously, you mean? They weren't there before?
Yep.
They just turned up there kind of in the wake
right.
of the...
Yep, they yeah. obviously hunkered down during the storm.
Yeah.
And that next morning when the sun came out and the sky was blue, the birds were out as well.
Wow. All right, well, let's take a... Paul, get someone else involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Nancy Mira. Hello, it's
yes,
you.
I have a question.
Yes, please go ahead.
I live in Pasco County on a large farm, and I was wondering if I have great horned owls on my property, and I'm seeing a decline in yellow rat snakes and black snakes in general. Are they getting those yellow rat snakes, and are they also getting rattlesnakes?
No, your great horned owls are not snake catchers, okay? In general, that is not a prey that they would go after. The snakes could be a result of the weather and just the changing season right now that you're seeing. But in terms of raptors eating snakes, caracara eat snakes, which you don't really have there in Polk County. And also your red-tailed hawks and red-shouldered hawks in particular, the shoulders will go after snakes, but I think it could just be seasonal with your snakes. But your great horned owls are not eating snakes.
Okay, thank you so much. I love your show, and I also noticed, like you said about the warblers, I noticed a big flock of palm warblers on my farm last week.
Mm-hmm.
That just arrived, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's awesome.
That's interesting. That's great. All right, well, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So on a snake-related note, one of our emailers wrote in, the subject heading says, ban glue traps. I think this is back to our rat conversation. And then it's in the body of the email, it says, saved a garter snake stuck in a glue trap by using safe oil.
You know, I'll tell you, it's very interesting that for a snake, the oil is easier to get off the snake than it is a bird. If you pour oil on a bird's feathers, then we've got an issue with having to get that off the feathers and then put their own oil back on the feathers so they're waterproof. But glue traps really get a variety of different animals, from birds, little lizards, and salamanders. Glue traps are not a really great way to control your rodent population.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about the glue trap, we had a bird that was really stuck badly on it, and so I called the manufacturer. And the thing to use to take an animal or bird off of a glue trap is peanut butter.
Wow.
So you know, something none of us would have ever thought, right?
Right. So just so I'm tracking our conversation about rats and rat poison and the unfortunate effects that can have on our bird friends. So we don't want to use rat poison, and we do want to use traps. We want to be careful about what kind of traps, I guess, we're using.
Correct, with the rat traps. And the glue traps in general are just, the thing that happens to them is people put them outside, or they put them on the porch and they have holes in their porch so little animals can get in there. And we get a variety of different animals stuck on glue traps. And the people have poured oil all over and gotten them off the glue traps or pulled them off the glue traps and pulled all their feathers out. So peanut butter works great. But
yeah.
Again, glue traps, not a great way to control your your rodent population, your birds of prey in your neighborhood could catch 100 times more rats than that glue trap will ever catch if you just leave them alone.
Okay, we have a longer email I'll get to in a sec. I'll try to at least. So, okay, so will you say are there kind of groups of ailments that you see at the Raptor Center that the birds that come in that have been rescued or that you've rescued directly, you know, that are kind of more common things that seem to afflict them?
There are, yes, hit by car, running into windows, you know, unfortunately getting shot, poisoned, and are common occurrences. And then every time you think you've seen it all, you get an animal or bird, wildlife in that's gotten into something, and you think to yourself, well, how did this happen? You know, I've gotten them in covered in grease, you know, just a variety of different things that people leave out open. And the animal sees a lizard on the side or something and goes after it, slips into the bucket, and now is covered in something that it's not supposed to be. Or that you or I wouldn't want to touch either.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Jeez.
So just be careful. Don't leave any open containers out that contain even water. You know, things can drown in water that's left in a bucket.
And how long obviously it's going to vary about what brought them there, but how long is there a general length of treatment that the raptors have before they're hopefully ready to be released?
The average raptor is with us 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
That's it. You know, some of them that we have much longer. The osprey I described to you today that came in that had the feathers all burned off.
Right.
If that bird survives this, it'll be in captivity till next year when every single feather comes off and it regrows new feathers.
Okay.
So that bird will be in captivity a year.
Yeah.
Our general rule of thumb as from FWC and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, we're governed by both of them, and USDA is 180 days. If
that's the maximum you're saying? Or
if an animal stays in captivity more than 180 days, then they're required to have vet letters there of why they're actually still there, and are they tracking for release or are they tracking for placement?
Right, because I would think, too, that especially as it gets to be anywhere near that long of a stint, but even just a brief stint, they would have to, I guess you guys would have to be sort of handling their ongoing training so that as soon as they were released, they would still do normal, natural bird behaviors, right?
Yeah, and one of the reasons we say as rehabbers that we don't like the general public, like it during the storm, I picked up the baby squirrel, I've had the baby squirrel 4 days. What did you feed it? They fed it incorrectly. It's, you know, different things. And they talk to them and they baby them. We don't do that. We interact with the animals that are going to be released only for medical care. And the babies are not babied. They are, if we take something in as an infant, as a bird of prey, it is live prey tested to make sure that they can actually capture and kill.
What I meant. Those habits and those behaviors are triggered and maintained. So while they can't be freed until the feathers come all in or whatever is that one example, they can still, once they are released, they can be regular raptors out in the wild.
They can survive, right. Yeah. Our last phase, we have a 100-foot flight cage, which I'm happy to tell you did not get damaged at all.
And, wow.
And it is in Polk
County. You guys were probably sweating that one.
We were. It's 100 feet long and 18 feet tall and 18 feet wide. And that's where we recondition birds for flight. And we actually go in there and make the birds fly back and forth and back and forth to do physical therapy. And for example, like with owls fly completely 100% silent. So in that large cage, we can test to make sure that we can't hear them flying at all. And why is that important?
Oh, because if you did hear them, something would still be amiss?
Something would still be amiss, that's correct. And more importantly for them, an owl hunts in total darkness. They rely on their sound. Mm. And the being able to fly silently is one of their weapons, right? Because if you can't hear them coming,
can't sneak up on the unfortunate prey.
Correct, yeah, correct. But everybody's got to eat.
Yeah, no, one way or the other, right? Yeah. So what kind of cost does the Raptor Center incur, like, let's say, rehabbing one of those birds you mentioned? Like, what would be involved? Is it broken out sort of by bird, or is there ongoing weekly costs, or
weekly costs for us for food. We spend between $800 and $1,200 a week just on food alone for the animals to rehab them. And for medical care, we have a lot of really good vets that work with us and don't charge us. Some of us just charge, but we pay for medicines. So on average, to rehabilitate 1,000 birds a year costs us about $80,000.
Mm.
And that's all doing that with volunteer employees. We are a 100% volunteer-based organization.
And where does that funding, how is the Raptor Center funded?
Well, we fund it through things like the Wonders of Wildlife Festival, and we really have shifted a lot of our focus to education with a kind of the caveat, I can save the planet. And that is, you know, maybe we can't save the whole planet, but we can save our little piece of it.
Sure.
So we spend a lot of time doing education, talking to people about what they can do to help animals and birds and the planet in general, so that, you know, we've got birds and animals and birds flying around in the sky in the future.
So those events are among the things that generate revenue that help make up that operating budget.
Right. And just, you know, we get a lot of good folks that donate. We are 100%, you know, based, volunteer-based, and rely on donations to operate.
All right, cool. We're going to talk a little bit more about the festival in just a moment, but let's take another call here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Nancy Mira.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
It's you.
Go ahead, please.
I was curious about creating habitat for birds, and I was thinking lately particularly of owls, but do you have any top recommendations for creating habitats for animals, or should we just not try to do that? And I can take my call off there.
Okay, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
In terms of creating habitat, I think that the part that's so important is large old growth trees. So creating habitat is planting trees and starting to plant longleaf pines and things that were native to Florida. There's nothing wrong with creating habitat. In fact, actually planting large groups of trees together is one way to help change the climate. We know that in large areas of desert places in the world where people planted a million trees, they were able to change the climate back to the way it was before it was deforested. So I think that creating habitat for birds means a nice kind of healthy yard full of native plants. And if owls in particular, large trees, owls do not build their own nest. They steal nests from other birds. So you can help owls by putting owl boxes up and maintaining those. And you'll actually attract owls to your property if you have the right box there for the species that's in your area.
Are owl boxes a substitute sort of for a nest, or...
For owls, they really are.
Yeah.
You know, kestrels are also cavity nesters. So anywhere that a bird used to nest in dead trees, we pull our dead trees down now because the insurance companies tell us to, right?
Mm.
So there's not as many. So by creating boxes, bluebird boxes, kestrel boxes, owl boxes, you do create an actual habitat where that animal will feel comfortable nesting, as long as the surrounding area supports them with a food base.
And are the boxes distinctly different? So a kestrel would go in this kind of box and another bird would go in this kind of box, but the twain wouldn't meet necessarily?
Well, you know, it's fascinating. Birds choose their cavity by the size of the hole. So a lot of them are taking woodpeckers. You know, woodpeckers are great at building these great cavities,
sure,
in the tree. And so a kestrel would love to go into a woodpecker hole. So kestrels and screech owls can share the same boxes, but then a barred owl takes a specific box, a barn owl takes a specific box, and a great horned owl actually nests in an open platform. They open nest in trees.
That's great. So there's it's rare that someone steals somebody else's box, because it's not really their own creation, but it sounds like it's not unheard of either.
No, it's not unheard of. And for the small birds like these kestrels, there are other birds that like to nest in those, like flycatchers. They'll go in and actually use that nest inside there.
Cool. All right, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Nancy Mira.
Hi, my name's John Murphy. I'm in Stafford. I got a quick question.
Okay.
It's pretty easy, I think. I've got, I think, great horned owl, a family not far from me. They're very big. And I have a number of different type of hawks. I don't know what kind, probably all the same kind. And I also have bats. The owls, are the hawks feed on bats at all?
Yes, they do.
Okay, well, I hate that, but everybody's got to eat, right?
Well, that's true. Just place your bat house. If you've got a bat house, you know, there's... For natural predation, there's nothing that you can really do, but owls are out at night and bats are out at night, and owls will predate on bats.
Okay. Well, thank you for the information. You have a great day, and thanks for your show.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, Nancy, let's not pussyfoot around anymore. Let's start talking about the festivals. So first of all, I mentioned some of these a little bit initially, but let's address the basics. So it's November 9th. It's 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's Edward Medard Conservation Park. That's on Turkey Creek Road in Plant City. Give us kind of the lowdown of what people might expect to see. And one of our emailers wrote in saying, will there be any raptors at the Wonders of Wildlife Festival? Something tells me there will be.
There will be raptors. Yeah. And in fact, we have a live bird of prey show by EarthQuest with Steve Hottie. And he will be free-flying birds of prey. There'll be an Andean condor, which is the largest bird of prey in the world. She has an 11-foot wingspan.
Wow.
And he has a variety of other birds. That show will be at 11, and again at 2. We have just a variety of Seaside Seabird will be there with their birds. We will be there with photo opportunities. We have 7 birds of prey, including a Caracara red-tailed hawk, chirp here, and several eastern screech owls. And there will be a variety of other people there with not only raptors, but live animals such as skunks and things like that, too.
That's great. And you made a reference to Seaside Seabird Sanctuary, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were hit really hard by Helene, right, if I'm not
they
mistaken?
They were hit hard, but, you know, their buildings were sound. And from Milton, they've sustained another $100,000 worth of damage. But
I didn't know the updated thing.
It's fixable. You know, there are wildlife centers, which I think made sense at one point in time to have them on the coast before we had the number of storms we have now. But our major rehab centers, several of them, Seaside Seabird, Save Our Seabirds, Wildlife Inc. on Anna Maria, completely wiped out. Peace River, completely wiped out. We haven't heard from Save Our Seabirds in Sarasota yet. We know that Crow down in Sanibel sustained flooding, but no damage to the hospital, and the cages are intact. But the small rehabbers that rehab out of their houses, a lot of them have been hit. Mm. Lady does just squirrels, and a tree fell on her house, so she couldn't take any squirrels.
Oh, geez.
So things like that that happened. But there are rehabbers throughout Central Florida who have been greatly affected, and we're all trying to help each other.
Sounds like that's kind of just customary, is that you guys kind of all support each other and stay in touch. And if somebody can help out somebody by taking some birds in the wake of a storm or before a storm, or you know, help when there's been damage or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be, everybody will step up to the extent they can.
Yeah. We usually send our osprey over to Seaside Seabird or Save Our Seabirds. And both of those facilities close to intake. So the osprey we had today traveled all the way north of Orlando to Maitland to the Audubon Center for Birds of Prey.
And I could be wrong about this. I think some birds and or other wildlife went as far as over to where I live on the other side of the state to Bush Wildlife Sanctuary over there.
Yes, they did.
Jupiter,
yeah, there
Jupiter
was a lot
Farms.
Of stuff that was evacuated over to Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's nice. Everybody kind of helps each other that
Majority
way.
Majority of us do work really well together.
I'm sure, yeah.
You know? Well, it's a common cause, and sadly...
Well, probably a lot of people cut from the same cloth, right?
I mean, they are, and you know, there's more herd animals than we can take care of.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the another question or two that came from the same one about wondering if there's raptors going to be at the festival. What is your favorite bird and your favorite non-feathered animal?
Well, my family would tell you my favorite bird's whatever one's in front of me. But I would probably have to tell you juvenile red-tailed hawk is one of my very favorites.
And is that like the one that you brought in a few years ago?
Yeah. So I love them. I love all birds of prey.
Let me ask about that before I should let you finish first, but I've been meaning to ask, and I keep not asking. What is it about raptors, birds of prey, that speaks to you? Because clearly it's a huge passion, and why is that? What is it about them that speak to you that way?
Well, from the first time that I picked up a bald eagle, I just was absolutely in love with them. And I think from a rehabilitative perspective, they're fairly large, sturdy birds. And so where sometimes they sustain injuries, we could not fix that on a songbird.
Yeah.
But just love the majestic, watching them fly and build nest and how good of a parents they are. And if you really watch a family of raptors rear their young, how they really protect them and feed them just fascinated me. And like I said, from the first time I held a bald eagle in my arms, I was hooked. I love eagles. We've rescued 27 of them this year alone.
Wow, that's a lot. Yeah.
Festival, there will be an eagle at the festival. We're hoping for Thunder from Moccasin Lake to be there, actually with some photo opportunities. There'll also be large reptiles there, if that's your thing. We have a Burmese python baby that from J&T's Reptiles, so over 10 feet long. A monitor lizard, 7 feet long, Precious, and John will be
Precious.
Doing, Precious, yeah.
That's the name of the monitor
water,
lizard?
The water, yeah, 7 foot long
that's
lizard.
That's hilarious.
Right? And, but he'll be doing a show on, these are animals that were confiscated in the Everglades. He works closely with FWC, and he'll be doing a show on that. We'll be doing our puppet show called I Can Save the Planet, which is a view from 14 native Florida animals of what we as humans can do to help them and their environment. We also have a magical bird bus that will be there, and that's
and there's an animal parade, if I'm not
there's
mistaken.
There's an animal parade, and this year
now
we're so excited.
Tell me about that. I got to hear about this.
Well, we have 40 costumes that we let everyone put on. If you and the thing I really want to tell everyone is that if you wear an animal costume to the festival, you get in free.
Wow.
So $20.
I'm
going to
start thinking about this now.
It's $15 in advance. But the animal parade this year is going to be led by the U.S. Department of Forestry Smokey Bear.
Oh, wow.
So that's okay. At noon. And we do a parade through the fairgrounds, through the festival grounds. And it's just really a fun activity. We play music and the kids have tambourines. And
that's great. Well, I think with just a little bit of adjustment, I could pass for a red-tailed hawk. So maybe I should enter the contest.
We could definitely. Anyone that wants to do that, we welcome it.
That's great. That's fantastic. So where would people find out about more about the festival and especially how to get tickets?
You can go to our website, which is the RaptorCenterOfTampaBay.org, and then go to events, Wonders of Wildlife. You can also go, it has its own Facebook page, Wonders of Wildlife Festival. There's a link there for tickets. And on our Facebook page, the event there is listed also on the event page, and there's a link for tickets there as well.
That's great. So it's simple, one way or the other, Raptor Center website or Facebook page, and you can just get your tickets. And again, that's coming up November 9th. Pretty much an all-day event, really, with all the different things going on.
All kinds of things. Yeah. Live mermaids and face painting. And there's great food trucks. There's live music. There's a lot of artisans and craftspeople that are, nature-related. And just there's fun things to do at every single booth.
Yeah.
So lots of stuff for kids, too.
Sounds fun, and it sounds like there's definitely a huge, as you've already noted, it's kind of like your mission and so many things, a big educational component to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but our goal is to try to really charge the next generation of conservationists. You know, our young people are the people we've got to really rely on to bring the environment back and where everyone can flourish, and that includes us.
Right, yeah, let's not forget us.
Well, as I say, we owe our whole existence to the fact there's 6 inches of topsoil, there's sunlight, and it rains. And so we need to take care of all of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask a question that came originally. I think the intention was to send a photo with it. I think eventually a photo did pop up, but there's been several emails. But the question itself, I think, is interesting, especially related to the storm action we've gotten recently. So a bird that looks exactly like this one, and that's the one where there was a photo, and I think some of their photo did turn up, but it looked like it's obviously some kind of raptor, I believe. Sat outside in the pouring rain for 30 to 45 minutes without moving off my chain link fence on Wednesday, hours before the storm came in. Do birds sit out in the pouring rain normally? Seem very odd because of both the rain and the fact that it never left its spot.
They do. It does seem strange to us, but the rain doesn't bother them the way it bothers us, and that we saw raptors sitting on the ground everywhere. Once it starts raining, they don't like to fly in the rain. I'm not saying they can't, but they don't like to. Mm. And there's certain birds, especially owls, that when their feathers get wet, they're not going to fly. So that bird sitting, it started to pour rain, and the bird just sitting there and saying, I'm just going to, just the same way we'd sit in our car saying, well, maybe it's going to lighten up and I can take off pretty soon.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not uncommon behavior at all.
Yeah.
Even on a sunny day, that sometimes raptors will sit for quite a long period of time. It takes a lot of energy to do what they do. It takes a lot of energy to fly.
They might just be resting, regardless of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes we get a lot of calls that the bird's only standing on one foot. That's pretty common for raptors, too. It's kind of like, I rest this foot, rest this foot.
Give them both a rest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Nancy, but I'd like to sort of wonder what the most, from your standpoint over these years, What do you think is the most misunderstood aspect of raptors?
The most misunderstood aspect of them is, I think, is that they're going to get your pet. That's one of them. You know, if there's a good rodent population out there, they don't hunt anything else. So misconception is that the bird is there hunting your pet. The bird's there hunting food. And if you have, you know, so I think that's a misconception. I think the other misconception that I get from people who call is the bird's in my backyard and I've locked myself in the house. Well, they're not going to attack you. You know, they're not going to unlock your door. They're not coming in. If you have a bird that gets in your house, a bird of prey, sometimes that does happen. Last night there was an owl in someone's barn and they wanted the owl out of the barn. You know, the bird is not going to attack you. They're there looking for food. And so if you find an injured raptor in your yard, reach out for help. There's a lot of us who do this, and there's a place called animalhelpnow.org.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great because...
That Colorado-based? I'm not sure where they're based, but the reason
I like them so much is FWC, you can go to their list, and it only lists permitted rehabbers. And you might say, well, that's maybe all you want. Well, there's a lot of organizations that rescue and bring to rehabbers.
Yeah.
Animal Help Now lists all of those. So
that's great.
So even though you might not see that person that's, you know, 20 miles away from you, maybe somebody 2 miles away from you doesn't mind grabbing that bird and driving it 20 miles.
For sure. A great resource no matter what's going
but,
on.
But if you see a bird of prey on the ground and it's there more than 2 hours or it does not move upon approach, if you walk up to it and it doesn't fly away, you should call for help. If the worst thing that happens is when we get there, the bird flies away, the best rescue is the one we don't have to do.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like just from our conversation here, you've alluded to so many, sounds like you get calls throughout any normal day, not counting any storm or wake of a storm, but just there sounds like there's constant questions.
Between 40 and 70 calls a day, even when there's no
hurricane. My goodness. Wow.
Yeah, lots of injured wildlife.
Yeah. All right, well, Nancy, I think we have reached the end of our time. This has been Nancy Mira from the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay. And again, the website for that is raptorcenterofTampaBay.org. And that's also where you can find out more, including getting your tickets for the Wonders of Wildlife Festival. That's coming up again on November 9th. And I'm gonna be sad to see Chirp go. He's certainly a very cool, calm, collected bird that is obviously very good at doing interviews. Doesn't say much, but he listens very intently.
He does. This is how he makes his living, and he loves being on radio and TV.
That's great. Well, we loved him having on radio, and we loved you having on radio too, Nancy. So thank you so much. Good luck with the festival, and thanks again for all your great work on behalf of all our bird friends and other wildlife. We're even getting into some of the other wildlife that floats around. My favorite
mammal, by the way, is an opossum.
Oh, okay, good. That makes sense.
Most misunderstood animal in North America.
Okay, I got you.
All right. You asked me that and we didn't answer.
That's right. Thanks for coming back to... All right, coming up in just a moment or two, we'll speak with Ann Paul about yet another festival coming up shortly. It's the Florida Birding and Nature Festival, 4-day event held in and around Apollo Beach, Florida. It starts tomorrow, October 17th, and it's slated to present a wide range of programming, including field trips, boat outings, expert seminars, and keynote speakers. We'll hear more about that when we speak to Ann in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WNO. Right now, though, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece about a raptor, no less, in a nod or a conversation we just had with Nancy. In this case, a raptor who's gone missing. Here's a piece called Balthazar by Andy Ritchie in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNO.
This is funny, though. Somebody in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago posted a sign on a telephone pole for a lost falcon. Like the bird. They're like, we lost our falcon, help us. I'm like, I can't. I'm not the Beastmaster. I can't summon wildlife from the sky. It's like, if you lose your dog and you post a sign, like, yeah, there's a chance you get your dog back, but if you lose your falcon, it's gone, dude. Forever, because it can fly and it hates you. It's not going to be hanging out in the woods one day like, God damn it, I really miss that hood. Nobody puts a hood on me out here that makes me think I'm asleep. That sucks. It's like, these people are never going to get their falcon back. I was like, well, maybe they'll get their falcon back. Because they're very smart. When they made the poster, they put a picture of the falcon on the poster. Yeah, which is very helpful if you're the one looking for it, right? Because that way you don't show up at their doorstep with the wrong falcon. I think we've all been there before. It's incredibly embarrassing. For all three parties involved, really. Falcon's just like, oh, this is not my house. I don't know why the falcon's Jewish in this joke, but it's a Yiddish falcon. And then underneath the picture, they put the falcon's name, Baltazar. And there was a $300 reward for him, too. I guess they're really expensive. So I'm like, whatever. I got nothing better to do this afternoon. I start walking up and on my block like, Baltazar! Baltazar! People are giving me spare change. Poor kid's touched in the head.
That was the late, great Andy Ritchie in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Balthazar, taken from his album titled King Dingling. Now it's time to speak with Ann Paul of the Florida Birding and Nature Festival, the four-day event that starts tomorrow, October 17th, with all kinds of activities in and around Apollo Beach. Here's Ann Paul on Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Ann.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals again.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm really glad to say that we're able to, you know, pull off the festival. We're in a community that just lived through a couple of pretty bad hurricane events, and a number of our field trips are canceled, but half of them are still going.
That's
and
great.
Now we're having the Nature Festival, and an expo, which is free and open to the public, and that's centered at the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission's Suncoast Youth Conservation Center in Apollo Beach, located on Dickman Road, just south of the Manatee Viewing Center, if you're aware of where that is. But Friday and Saturday, the Nature Expo will be open with all kinds of exhibits and nature items for sale. You need binoculars, it's a good chance. Nature art, all kinds of people there talking about their different projects that they're working on. You can buy some native plants from the Little Red Wagon is going to be there. It's just really going to be fun. And we're very excited this year because we've added something to the Nature Expo, which is EarthQuest is coming and on at two times during the day. At 11 o'clock and at 2:30, they're going to be flying wild birds.
Wow.
Eagles and falcons. We've got bleachers coming so people can sit, you know, comfortably and watch this flying exhibit. And that'll be, again, 11 o'clock and 2:30 on Saturday at the Nature Expo. And that's free and open to the public. The festival itself, you know, we have 14 different seminars offered on Friday and Saturday. And it looks like we have 12 to 14 field trips that are up and running.
That's great.
So, you know.
That's amazing that many were able to be sustained based on the back-to-back hurricanes that we've all kind of absorbed here.
Yeah, and, you know, we're really excited that we're able to present such a rich program. We've also, I should mention, and this is really quite exciting, we've got two fabulous keynote speakers. One is Friday night, and that's going to be at the St. Andrew Presbyterian Church in Sun City Center, and it's, of all people, David Allen Sibley. And if you're familiar with the Birding Guides of North America and some other books that he's written, he's a fantastic artist, and the Birding Guides are his product. And he's coming to give a talk about birding and field guides, and it's, I mean, I'm so excited. He is birding aristocracy.
Yeah.
We're to have him be our keynote Friday evening speaker at Sun City Center at the St. Andrew Presbyterian Church. Dinner is included with that. Beautiful buffet by Richard Carr, who does a really good job with dinners. And on Saturday night, oh my gosh, we're so excited because Tim Lamon is coming, and he is a photographer for National Geographic with multiple programs with National Geographic, and he's going to be, we had to have a different spot because of conflict and, you know, kind of working on our feet here with after hurricane flooded our original meeting
location.
But we're going to be at the Sun City Center Convention Center Hall and that is on Saturday night, and that's where Tim Lamont is going to be there. And Greg Jones is going to be playing his music, so we're going to have music, we're going to have food, and we're going to have Tim Lamont Saturday night at the in Sun City Center at the convention hall.
All right, so I'm going to jump in with a couple of things just to point out a couple of things, because one thing is just people might be interested to go to the website floridabirdingandnaturefestival.org to see the whole schedule and specifics about some of these events that you mentioned, some that we haven't had a chance to talk about. And we should also note, even though so far most of the things we've mentioned that you've mentioned so far are birding oriented, and of course that's natural when birding's in part of the name of the festival, but there are also other things being covered, including ranging from butterflies to orcas to gopher tortoise to dolphin and so on. So there's really quite a bit of an array of things that are being discussed in keynotes or having some of these trips to them, depending on which ones you're interested in. So, and that's all over the 4 days from October 17th to 20th. But the key thing, I think, is to hit the website and find out more. And that's how you can also get your tickets through the website, right, Anne, I assume?
Yeah, you can. You can sign right up. There is a cost to go to the seminars and on the field trips. But the keynotes are offered separately without having to register for the festival. And we're offering, if you come to both, you get a $20 discount for that.
That's great.
Both. So there's all kinds of opportunities to really participate in this. But again, the Nature Expo and the Earth Quest bird performance on Saturday, you know, that's free. The Nature Expo will be 2 days, Friday and Saturday, all day at the Youth Conservation Center there on Dickman Road in Apollo Beach. So just a lot going on. We feel as though it's, you know, something for everybody. Oh, we also have a student-led field trip for kids during the day on Saturday. So you can look for that on the website, too.
Okay, well, I think we're just about near the end of our time, Anne, but this all sounds fantastic. I'm so glad the show must go on. And again, floridabirdingandnaturefestival.org for more information, tickets, and more details about some of these great activities that are being offered. Thank you so much, Anne. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you. Coming up on WNF is the Conversation, the great show hosted by Mauro Nunez and Joe Kane Carter. After that, we shift back to music programming with Jim Bannon holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m., at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks in and then continues on throughout the day. More great stuff here on 88.5 WMNF. So, just already reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Appreciate you listening. And we'll be back next Wednesday with another edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Wiki, Watch, and Beyond. Thanks.